Hey, everybody, it's Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast. And as I've mentioned in previous episodes recently, we're under renovation and we continue to make changes. And you're going to notice things. Those of you that watch on YouTube, you will see changes coming. But if you listen only, we should still sound the same. It's all that quality voice that we try to do the DJ work. Well, this week we are going to be talking about cotton. And specifically with Gary Adams, he is president of the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol and also the National Cotton Council. We're going to talk about both roles, and cotton is the center of both of those discussion points. And the big thing is about sustainability. If you go back a couple of weeks when we talked about sustainability and millennials under 30, under 40, driving a lot of the oat market. A lot of similarities there. We'll discuss that specific point. But we'll also find out about what sustainability means in the cotton industry and a registry that's coming forward. So we always appreciate all of your comments. And what would really mean a lot is if you would tell a friend that you've listened to this podcast. Share with them something they might find interesting. Or, I really liked this episode. This one, I could do without. I totally get it. Hit me up with feedback. paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. Now, let's get real and talk cotton with Gary Adams. Gary, every week on Market to Market, we have a conversation about commodities. And the one that the I-State people always ask me about is, why do you talk about cotton? Cotton has become a big deal, not just in cotton country. Why is that?
Well, I think other commodities look at it, one, because they know when you look at the cotton producing states, there's a competition that goes on for acreage every year, because we know most of our cotton farmers also plant corn and soybeans. So it does draw interest from other commodities because they wonder about, as markets change, as input costs change, what's the shift going to be, or the trade-offs going to be between acreage. And then I would think the other thing, too, is that we have over the last 20 years or so seen cotton acres kind of migrate a little further north than historically we've seen. You know, the Boot Hill of Missouri is a significant cotton producer. And then notably, Kansas acreage has expanded quite a lot, and really along that southern tier of counties.
Is that because of price, or what do you think is the biggest factor in changing some acres from what maybe used to be soybeans or wheat to cotton?
I think a couple of things come into play. One is some of the new varieties that have come to the market are a little bit shorter season. So for those areas that do not have as long a growing season as you might find further to the south, they found that cotton can work. I think also in some of what might be a little bit drier climate, or maybe there's not as much irrigation available, cotton will typically do well because it's a fairly drought tolerant crop.
And you have a dual hat role in our discussion here. We're going to talk about the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, but you're also the CEO of the National Cotton Council. Do you watch the commodity markets every day and wonder what that does? Or, I mean, I know you got a high level spot, but how do you keep an eye? Like, is it right over where you're looking at me? Are you watching the trade up and down every day?
I try to keep up with it. I don't follow that intraday trading as much as I used to, but certainly watch what's going on within the overall commodity market trends, because that has a big impact in terms of, you know, what supply and demand is going to look like. It also has implications in terms of some of the policies that we work for cotton farmers.
Are the number of cotton farmers expanding?
They've been relatively stable. If you look at the last couple of census of ags that's come out from USDA, we've got approximately about 16,500 cotton farms in the United States. Most of those are in 17 states that stretch from Virginia to California. Again, the number has been relatively stable when you look at the aggregate. There's certainly been some areas of expansion. We talked about some of them in states such as Kansas.
I had a discussion, it's probably been a year ago already here on this podcast, with a couple of longtime cotton brokers in the Mississippi area. And they kind of told me that it is aristocratic in the sense of families have done this for generations. Is there new farmers in these new acres coming on, or are we seeing a farmer that might be in Mississippi have a farm in a new spot?
Well, some of the areas that have gone into cotton, we're seeing those are new farmers to cotton. They may have already been an established farming operation that might have predominantly been in grains or oilseeds. Kansas is one of those areas we've already talked about. But if we look at the upper panhandle of Texas up in the Amarillo area, those are, you know, longtime grain farmers that have over the course of the past probably 15 years or so that have expanded into cotton. And some of it was agronomics that drove that. Some of it was water availability. So we're seeing a little bit of both. There's places in the Delta and in the Mid-South where folks have moved away from cotton, incorporated more grains into their farming operation. And then as we look at some of these newer areas, some new farming operations that have gotten into cotton.
Gary, do you see these new producers as opportunities to maybe start off on a sustainable foot?
Well, I think so. And I think as we look at kind of the importance of sustainability to the U.S. cotton industry in particular, meeting the needs, I think a couple of things. One, we want to meet the needs of the customers. And we know that the brands and retailers are under increased scrutiny about how they source raw materials. So I believe we as a U.S. cotton industry have a great opportunity to talk about the sustainability of U.S. farming and the technology that our growers have adopted, the new production practices they're doing, the way they're becoming more efficient with their resources.
Well, and sustainability is a big part of the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. That's kind of what we're talking about today. So give me what's the elevator pitch on this?
It is in U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol is a relatively new program by the U.S. cotton industry. We've started enrolling growers in the 2020 crop. And really, it is a farm level program where we're working with growers. We collect data from those participants on their farm management practices. We also collect data on a representative sample of their fields that allows us to do a field print analysis. But I think as we talk to growers, we try to stress to them, given the current environment and given where we see, you know, the dynamics of demand going in front of us, we believe this is critical to making sure that we can secure the demand base for U.S. cotton and even expand the demand base for U.S. cotton. And so it's an integral part of your business decisions is to allow us to be able to demonstrate to the brands and retailers the sustainability of U.S. cotton.
Well, sustainability has been, I don't know if buzzword is the right way to call it, but it is a call out to many parts of agriculture. Who do you think is driving that? The consumer, but is it a certain type of consumer that wants to know where their product was grown, how it was grown, where it came from?
I think based on some of the research that we have done, you see that more in probably the younger consumers. That as you look at maybe those 20 and 30 something consumers, they're asking more questions about knowing where their products come from. So we see that as a dynamic there. We also know that brands and retailers are under scrutiny from some of the NGOs, some of the environmental groups also that are looking at how those brands and retailers are making those sourcing decisions. And most of the major brands and retailers have set company goals that by a certain year in the future, whether it's 2025 or another year out or a few years out, that they want to be sourcing all of their raw materials from what they consider to be sustainable sources. And they may have a list of what they consider to be sustainable sources. We want to make sure that U.S. cotton is on that list of where they're looking to buy their cotton for the apparel products they make, for the home furnishings that they manufacture.
I don't watch the interday of a couple of commodities as closely. Cotton would be one of them. Another one is oats. I had an oats analyst tell me a couple of weeks ago that the millennial is driving a lot of their interest. When you say younger 20-30, that we're kind of talking about that same generation. Is there any correlation, do you think, between your two commodities? I mean, I don't know if they move in concert with one another. I don't study it enough to know if they do, but is there any parallels that you see of that younger consumer driving your two industries?
I think you can even be broader than just our two industries. I think it probably holds true for agriculture in general. And whether you look at livestock products, whether you look at crop products, I think we're all facing that same type of consumer base that's asking those questions. And I believe we have, as U.S. cotton farmers or as U.S. agriculture, we have a great opportunity with the data that we're collecting and being able then to take that data and present it in an aggregate manner. But I think we have just a great story to tell, and it's a matter of being able to demonstrate to the consumer, to those brands and retailers, that this is what our farmers are doing today, and it's what they've been doing. You mentioned about sustainability being a buzzword. You can go back, back to the early 80s and see what farmers have been doing really now for decades of becoming more efficient with their resources, and they were being sustainable before that was kind of the catchphrase that we apply to this now.
They were doing it before it was cool.
Exactly.
They were doing it before knowing that they were doing it.
Yeah.
So the Cotton Trust Protocol, how's that funded? What's the source on that?
So a lot of the funding up to this point has been through cotton industry organizations, National Cotton Council. We work closely with another group, Cotton Incorporated. Also, our export promotion arm, Cotton Council International, has been key in funding that as well. Now, as we begin to get more membership into the program, both from the brand retailers as well as the mill manufacturers, then it will be a dues-driven organization where we have membership. We have a membership fee structure as they are sourcing cotton through the program, as they're getting access to that environmental data. So that's really, we're going to be migrating it from an industry funded to one more membership funded organization.
But that also sounds like you're getting buy-in from many parties when they have an investment in something like this.
We are, and really the brands and retailers are going to be key to making this successful. Actually, I think there's two keys. One's there's getting the farmers to participate and provide us the data. And then there's the brands and retailers that find value in what we're offering from the data and the sustainability messages. So right now we have about 35 to 40 brands and retailers that have joined the program so far, and some major names such as Levi's, Gap and their associated brands, PVH. We also have membership throughout the textile supply chain. So we'll have yarn spinners, fabric manufacturers to cut. And so again, we need to be in a position where we feel like we are providing value to that textile supply chain. But that's where the buy-in is going to come from.
I know this took longer than 2 years to get going in 20 and 21 growing seasons that we're talking about. But in that time, there has been, when you mentioned yarn, there's been claims about what goes on in China and the processes to make some of that yarn that both American and other global brands, clothing brands, had problems with. Did that help accelerate your push to expand the number of bales that are in this program?
I think it is definitely giving momentum to what we're trying to accomplish in the trust protocol. And just to kind of put it in context, when we started putting the program together, the real focus was on the environmental metrics that we could collect the information on. So the way we can talk about energy efficiency, water usage for those irrigated producers, greenhouse gas emissions, and soil conservation, and those are still important environmental metrics. But the other aspect of the program is, as we track the cotton through the supply chain, is bringing a transparency to the supply chain that brands and retailers really haven't had before. In other words, knowing each of those companies that are part of that supply chain. And I will say, just the concerns about forced labor and the spotlight that's being shown in that arena has brought the need for transparency to the forefront for brands and retailers. So hopefully we're bringing a program to that has the sustainability data, it has the environmental data, but it also has that transparency in the supply chain that we can offer brands and retailers.
I'm sitting in the middle of the I states here, and I know that my grain bins around me and that corn, in some places soybeans stored, I have a general sense of where that corn came from, and maybe it gets stirred with another field. With cotton, it's different in the sense you already kind of knew there were barcodes on those bales, and you knew where it was coming from. So was that a help? And how do you take what step was taken to then finish off this second part of the traceability that you've been discussing?
Yeah, That's a great question and a great point. And we do, within the U.S. cotton industry, we had an advantage because of the system that we have with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where they grade every bale of cotton. So in a typical year, we'll produce about 18 million bales of cotton. That's each bale's approximately 500 pounds. Each bale is sampled, and the quality characteristics are determined, and there's a permanent bale identification number attached to that bale. So we know each of those individual bales. Now, the challenge can be when it gets into the textile supply chain, and it goes to the yarn manufacturer, and then it goes further. Then it can be blended, whether it be with cottons from other countries, whether it be with man-made fibers such as polyester. So it can become more of a challenge to track once you get into that part of the supply chain. What we're doing with the Trust Protocol is working with a company called Textile Genesis that has a blockchain system of tracking those transactions through the system. So where the cotton went, how much yarn was produced, where the yarn went, to the fabric manufacturer and all the way through. So that's the next level of transparency to hopefully try to go, you know, beyond farm gate and beyond that first point of sale from the farmer or the merchandiser to the yarn mill, but then take it all the way through the system. And it's a challenge because it moves through several hands. That piece of cotton is going to move through several hands before it finally becomes a finished consumer product.
Well, I was going to ask, do you have, where's the pushback on that? Because that just sounds like another level or layer, but maybe not everybody has to be involved on those layers. Who, you know, is there a clearinghouse of some kind? I mean, I think you mentioned that, but I just want to make sure I get that point correct.
Well, and I think it's a, you know, this is a new way, I guess, of conducting business or a new level of transparency in the system as these companies are working on the platform to document those transactions that they're making to say the next person down the supply chain. So that's not something they've typically had to do in the past. I guess I would say though, that just again, kind of going back to the pressures that are out there on the brands and retailers and that those demands for transparency that we're hearing from the consumers, it just becomes the business climate that we're in, that we're operating in today. So businesses are adjusting. I think what's important is to figure out a system that hopefully can be scaled and that can, you know, be managed with as little burden as possible on those manufacturers to be able to provide that necessary data.
I have it written down that you had about 950,000 bales, or is that the goal? Tell me about kind of where we're at for numbers here.
Okay. And where we were in off the 2020 harvest was approximately 300 cotton producers that completed all the requirements. Their harvest was approximately 950,000 bales. So that was from last year's crop. Where we're working toward for 2021 is to hopefully get that 300 producers up to 750 producers. So more than double the number of participants. And then what we hope to see once this harvest is finished up and we know, you know, how many bales are produced, we'd like to get that up to about 3 million bales of production in the program. And again, we're working to get those growers enrolled. We'll be continuing to do that over the next 2 or 3 months, but that's the objective of what we'd like to see coming out of the 2021 harvest.
Let's stick with numbers as well. You have six metrics and you've covered a couple of them. I think it's something to do with land use and soil loss and carbon loss. Do I have those numbers of those metrics that you're trying to also benefiting from here in the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol?
Yeah, that's a good point. One of the projects that we did as an industry was to look at, you know, just some overall 10-year goals for key environmental metrics. And you mentioned there are six of them, that is soil conservation, soil carbon index, water irrigation, energy efficiency, greenhouse gas emissions. Not sure if I missed one or not. I think maybe we've got them. And land productivity are the six. One of the things we did as an industry, we looked at that track record that we've had from 1980 through 2015. And that track record is documented by a sustainability alliance known as Field to Market. And they've been in existence now for about 10 to 12 years. Cotton industry has been an active member since the inception. But they calculated, you know, the efficiency of resource use by cotton producers. They do it for other commodities as well. And so what we had was we had that track record from 1980 to 2015 that showed how we had become more efficient with our resources. We as an industry brought our scientists together and we looked at, okay, between 2015 and 2025, what would be some objectives for continuing to shrink that environmental footprint, you know, in terms of, for example, reducing greenhouse gas emissions by another 39%. That was one of those numerical targets that we're striving for as an industry. And we'll know where we stand relative to those targets once Field to Market completes calculations and we get to 2025. I think how that ties back to the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol is to say, you know, the Trust Protocol is a program that allows us to engage directly with growers. They can put their data in that gives them feedback on what their specific environmental metrics look like on that field. Hopefully it identifies ways and opportunities for continuous improvement. And then collectively participating in the program can hopefully drive us as an industry toward those targets that we've set. So that's a little bit how that links together. We've established some overarching targets. Now we're working with growers through the Trust Protocol to help us as an industry get to those objectives.
You bring up two points there I want to get to. One will be water. We'll discuss that in a moment. I want to look at, I guess, Big Brother that's looking at data, Gary. And there's a concern from some people of large firms that are trying to gather a lot of farm-level data and how that can either be used. It's talked about used. But there's two uses of the word use. And some see nefarious someone knows how the market is that can affect what price may come out or what type of product might be. That's also good farm research to know what's hot and what is the best place to sell your product. But there's also that concern from people who think, well, if they know what it is, they're going to artificially jack up or lower or cut. How do you balance those two sides of that debate?
Well, and we do get a lot of questions from growers as they're looking at participation in this program because there are concerns, and rightly so, about who has access to data and how that data is going to be used. We have a data privacy agreement with our growers when they choose to provide that information to us. We have certain ways that data will and will not be used. We'll only talk about it in aggregate. We're only looking at the information in terms of how we can calculate those environmental metrics. We don't collect anything on cost data. So we avoid any of that that type of information. And so really we're just, our commitment to the grower is we're only going to talk about your data in an aggregate format. It's only going to be used to really focus on those environmental metrics that we can convey to the brands and retailers. But yes, fully understand that growers are concerned always about how that information and data can and be used against them in some cases.
Let's get back to water now. I think in California, where the almond trees in the Central Valley of an area that where the water droplet is important, and you're seeing things get ripped out. Is there any possibility? I mean, cotton is a product that doesn't always need as much water as other products. It still needs water. It's not grown in a desert. But do you see any opportunity for expanding cotton into areas that you normally haven't been because of the water debate?
Well, first on California, that's a challenging situation in terms of water availability. And unfortunately, in 2021, we saw with some of the water allocations or lack of allocations that cotton acres fell to some of the lowest levels in California that we've seen in quite a number of years. I do think in some areas, and we've touched on this a little bit, where perhaps the water allocation is not as great as it would have been in the past, that growers are looking at cotton as an alternative. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've seen some of those acres, say in the upper panhandle of Texas, move into cotton, is that was traditionally more of corn country. And if there wasn't going to be as much water availability, You can typically get by with a little less water on cotton. It will be a little bit more drought resistant or drought tolerant. So I do think there's been some opportunities there. I think also one of the things that's been interesting that we've seen from our producers is how they have tried to be as efficient as possible with the use of their water, whether that be changing, you know, the types of nozzles that are on their center pivots, things like that, and just really trying to work to get as much productivity and value out of every drop of water that they can.
And that is something that all farmers are going to have to deal with as we move forward, is the water debate. I keep hearing, you know, we just are coming off the Thanksgiving holiday, and, you know, you're with family when they start talking about, you know, the biggest issue is water. I'm like, yes, I'm aware. Water is a very big issue, and that's something to be discussed. Cotton industry as a whole, what would you say if you had to grade it right now? Where are you standing?
Well, industry as a whole, certainly prices are at the highest level they've been in about a decade. So we've seen quite a bounce in prices that has some optimism among our producers. I'd say the concern right now on the producers are input cost. And that's not isolated to cotton. I think all producers are concerned with what they're going to be paying for the 2022 crop. That's a concern. We've seen a nice bounce back in demand. It certainly slowed tremendously during the COVID shutdown, but demand is coming back. Right now, the challenge we're facing, again, we're facing labor issues, and we're facing supply chain logistics issues. Just the cost and the challenges of getting this crop to our end-use customer has changed dramatically over the course of the past year. So those are a few of the key issues and challenges that we see within the industry right now.
All right, Gary. You're sitting in Memphis. Where are you from?
Originally from Alabama, then Missouri, and now Tennessee.
And always with cotton? Or what other groups have you worked with?
Well, I was with the University of Missouri for a number of years with the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute, so did quite a bit of crops work. With them, cotton was one of the commodities that I worked on. For the last, 18 years, I've been with the National Cotton Council, so focused specifically on cotton.
And it's always kind of fun to see how all those crops fit together. I mean, that's what your time at FAPRI allowed you to do. Yeah. But also understanding there in Memphis, where you're sitting, is always a good spot to kind of figure out where you stand as well. And you're right in the heart of where everybody's growing it too.
It is. And Memphis has always had a long history with cotton, both in the production side and then also on the merchandising side. This has been and continues to be home of two of some of the largest cotton merchandising firms. Memphis is in the heart of the Cotton Belt.
All right, Gary, final pitch. If someone wants to, I'm sure if you're in the cotton industry, you've heard about this, but make one more pitch on why you think it's important that somebody enrolls their acres and follows through all the protocols that you mentioned there with the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol.
Well, we do think it's important for producers to participate. We want to be able to provide them feedback, hopefully, new information that they haven't previously had access to. I think it also gives us the data to allow us to do a better job to convey to the brands and retailers that U.S. cotton is the cotton that they should be buying. You can go to the website, which is trustuscotton.org, for more information. We're doing webinars with growers. We've got how-tos for producers that would like to enroll, so we encourage you to check that out.
Gary Adams, thank you so very much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
My thanks to Gary Adams on this installment of the MTOM Show podcast, which is a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. If you had feedback for us, you can send us an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Thank you so much for watching or listening. We'll talk to you next time.